The crater was cracked, crisscrossed with sinuous rills. Once in a while, a whiff of ammonia or methane or one of the noble gases would seep out from the moon's deep interior through those cracks. It was one of the reasons Moonbase had been sighted inside Alphonsus's circling mountains. One day they would drill for the methane and ammonia, valuable sources of life-supporting volatiles. Paul saw the unfinished oxygen plant and a crew of construction technicians milling around it like space-suited ants. Oxygen was the most valuable resource of them all in space. If Moonbase ever became profitable, it would be by selling oxygen to the factories and other facilities in Earth orbit. The spacecraft tilted over so that it could land on its rocket exhausts, and the lunar landscape shifted out of Paul's view. Clasping the hand grips on either side of the port, he felt the slightest of pressures, just a gentle nudge, and then the soft thump of landing. Weight returned, but it was only a sixth of the weight he felt on Earth. This was the moon. Paul felt as if he were returning home. It took less than 10 minutes for the space-suited ground crew to connect the flexible tunnel to the lander's hatch. I wish the ground crews at commercial airports worked so fast, Paul thought as he made his way, slightly bent over, through the ribbed tunnel and into the main entrance of Moonbase. It was hardly grand. Moonbase consisted of a dozen temporary shelters, each buried beneath piles of regolith rubble and interconnected by tunnels barely high enough to stand in. The tempos, developed out of modules for space stations, reminded Paul of mobile homes, long and narrow, cramped and confining, buzzing with electrical machinery and the constant rattle of air pumps, lit by ghastly overhead fluorescence that made everyone's complexion look sickly, smelling of sweat and machine oil and microwaved fast food and too many people crowded too close together. Paul loved it. Wojo was at the receiving desk, checking out the cargo that the lander was unloading. His computer screen split between the invoice list and a camera view of the space-suited ground crew hauling out the crates from the lander's cargo platforms.
"So you decided to come live with the proletariat for a while," Wojo said pleasantly. He was a bulky man, big in the shoulders with a beer gut and the glittering eyes of a seeker after truth. Roughly Paul's age, Wojo's hair and ragged beard were already dead white and thinning. He insisted that it was from the radiation dosage he received when he worked out on the lunar surface. "How are you doing, Wojo?" Paul asked, sliding his one travel bag from his shoulder and letting it thump softly on the plastic flooring.
"Still trying to get those narrow-minded bean counters in the insurance office to admit that the company owes me premium pay," Wojo grumbled, not taking his eyes from his display screen.
It was an old, old argument. Wojo demanded compensation for his tractor maintenance work out on the surface, over and above the hazardous duty pay called for in his employment contract. Paul had steered clear of the fight while he'd been Wojo's division manager. Now that he was CEO, he feared that the man would ask him to intervene. But Wojo had not done that so far.
"They got a new manager in the so-called human resources department, a man so narrow-minded he can look through a keyhole with both eyes."
Paul laughed. "You don't like him?"
Wojo looked up and gave Paul a withering glance. "He tells lies. His feet stink. And he don't love Jesus."
"Yeah," Paul said. "You don't like him."
"He'll make a ton of money for you. He's so tight-fisted his palms have never seen the light of day."
Paul made his way past the receiving desk before Wojo could ask for any favors. Ginny Anson, pert and blonde and feisty, directed him through the tunnels to the sleeping quarters they had reserved for him.
"I tried to find you a corner that's at least a little quieter than most. No snorers on either side of you, and you can barely hear the pumps."
"Thanks," Paul said. "I appreciate the special treatment."
"Nothing but the best for our new CEO."
"You're just trying to butter up the boss," he kidded, yet he realized that this was the first time the CEO had visited Moonbase. Ginny led him through two of the interconnected shelters, down another tunnel, and along the narrow central passageway of a third tempo. She's a chipper little handful, Paul thought. Fills out her coveralls in all the right places. Then he frowned inwardly. "Cut that out. You made a promise to Joanna, and you're going to keep it." "Yeah," he agreed silently. "But it won't be easy." "How's the air recycling plant going?" Paul asked, trying to put his focus on business.
Humming along fine, Jenny replied. Getting close to 80% efficiency. Give me another few months and I'll have the loop closed good, I bet you.
Really?
Uh-huh. Then we'll only need new oxy for what leaks through the airlocks, little stuff like that.
Good.
They stopped at the last partition. Paul saw his name neatly printed on the card alongside the doorway, and Lev Brudnoy's name on the partition across the narrow corridor. He doesn't snore, Paul thought, but he grunts a lot during the mating season, which is always for him.
Not quite an executive suite, huh? Jenny said, pulling back the accordion-fold partition to reveal a standard habitation compartment, 196 cubic feet, that had to serve as sleeping quarters and office, no bigger than anyone else's quarters. On a space station, in zero-G, 196 cubic feet was almost generous. Here on the moon it came close to inducing claustrophobia. Paul shrugged and gave the standard line, "Beat sleeping outside."
"Not by much," Jenny replied with a standard counter.
He could smell a soft, flowery fragrance.
"How do you stay so fresh in these sardine cans?"
She smiled prettily.
"I just took my weekly shower a couple of hours ago."
"In your honor. Ask me again in a few days." A vision of her lithe body glistening with sweat filled Paul's mind for an instant. "Pheromone heaven," he muttered.
"More like pheromone hell," Jenny said. "Head colds are a blessing around here."
Paul mumbled. "Yeah, maybe so."
"My cubbyhole's at the other end of this row," she said, grinning, "in case you get lonely."
"I'm a married man," Paul said quickly, thinking as he spoke that it sounded terribly nerdy. Jenny's grin turned saucy.
"Well, just in case."
Paul thanked her for the escort service and shooed her off, then went into his compartment, dropped onto the bunk, and immediately went to the desktop computer to call Joanna. But he was thinking of how pleasing it would be if Jenny really buttered up the boss, or vice versa.
"I just don't trust machines I can't see," Wojo grumbled.
Paul and the tractor teleoperator were sitting in the galley, hunched over Paul's hand-sized computer.
"If these things work, we can let them do all the construction out on the surface, and you can sit down here in comfort and count your insurance benefits."
Wojo fixed him with a baleful stare. The man's breath smelled terrible, like the exhaust fan from a brewery, Paul thought. But where in the hell would he get beer up here?
"Just how smart are these slime-sucking bugs?" Wojo asked.
"Like ants," said Paul. Wojo scratched at his shaggy beard.
"Read a book once."
"No,"
Paul pretended shock. With a small grin, Wojo said,
"You'd be surprised what I'm capable of. Anyway, this book was about army ants in South America. Every once in a while they run amok and strip the whole festering jungle right down to the bark and bone. Don't leave anything alive in their path."
"These bugs aren't like that," Paul said.
"How do you know?"
Paul had to think a moment.
"Well, for one thing, they're programmed to stop functioning at temperatures above 30 degrees.
Wojo heaved his bulk up from the spindly chair and trudged over to the thermostat on the curving wall of the galley.
"It's 27 degrees in here right now, just a smidge over 80 Fahrenheit.
I thought it felt warm in here." Walking back to their long, narrow table and settling ponderously into the little chair across from Paul, Wojo complained,
"We need more radiator surface outside. Only way to get rid of heat is to radiate it away. You know that. I know that. But your pus-infested, maggot-brained, excrement-eating systems engineers sitting comfy and cool in their air-conditioned offices in Savannah haven't seen fit to honor our humble requests for more radiators."
"But thermal conduction isn't worth a thimbleful of warm spit," Wojo said.
"We're dug in nice and deep. The rock outside our shells conducts heat about as well as a politician tells the unvarnished truth."
"So turning the thermostats down won't help?" With a massive shake of his shaggy head, Wojo said,
"All you do is put an extra load on the air conditioners and the radiators, which we need about as much as a prostitute needs an honest cop."
"I'll get you more radiators," Paul said.
"Thank you kindly, sir," said Wojo. "Now to get back to these mechanical viruses you brought up here with you. You say they're programmed to shut down at 30°C?
"That's right."
"All that means is that they won't work out on the surface in daylight.
Even at our current level of discussion,